Thank you, Trey. So, Trey's right. My background, for those of you who don't know me, is in soil fertility and nutrient management, corn and wheat systems, and some tobacco in there. So when I came into cotton as a cotton specialist for Virginia, I had a lot to learn because I've been working with annual crops. And as we all know, cotton is more indeterminate as an actual perennial plant. And so my program has really gone from basic soil fertility, looking at variety soil fertility interactions as well as other management schemes, to see what are the differences between some of these different maturity classes or different maturity groups, cotton cultivars grown in Virginia, as well as common varieties, the differences. Do we need to adjust nitrogen sulfur management in our coastal plain soils? And that's another caveat that I want to throw out there. So this is talking about the upper southeast coastal plain. So fertility recommendations on low CEC, low organic matter, sandy soils in Virginia probably are going to vary greatly, and responses are going to vary greatly from the mid-south to south Texas to the high plains. So that's one thing to keep in mind when you look at our data and our responses. And I'm going to touch a little bit more about this picture on this first slide of, and what we are seeing there in terms of fertility responses across some of our cotton varieties. So in addition to my fertility work, like Tyson and like a lot of us cotton specialists, I manage the OVT and on-farm testing programs. And when we started looking at some of these fertility variety interactions, I started looking at some of the OVT data. And this is 2017 from one of our locations. So we have yields over 1,900 pounds of lint to the acre in Virginia in our OVT, all the way down to below 1,100, right above 1,000. And this spans the germplasm that we're testing in Virginia. So when we think about nutrient needs and nutrient uptake and nutrient utilization, you would think that 1,900-pound crop would need different fertility recommendations, not just for nitrogen, sulfur, but for phosphorus, potassium, all of the major essential plant nutrients, versus that bottom variety in the lower right down there. And so that's one thing that my program's really set out to look at these differences in terms of these newer varieties and varieties in the past going forward. So as a fertility specialist, my overriding principle is Liebig's law at a minimum. So yield's going to be limited by the most limited nutrients. Typically for us in Virginia, we're 95% dry land production, probably closer to 98, 99 on cotton. And so water or environments typically are a limiting factor. It's going to determine nitrogen and sulfur responses. But following that, probably the second most yield limiting factor in terms of production in cotton is variety selection. As we go back to this previous graph, if a grower makes a poor variety decision, it could cost him hundreds of dollars an acre. And so part of my OVT and my fertility is putting the right variety on that acre with the right nutrient management plan. So this is our typical summary of NS uptake. 20 to 30 pounds of nitrogen to the acre between planting and first square is what we've measured in Virginia since I've been there, which I think is in line with what previous research has done. From first square to the harvest of cotton, we need an additional about 100 pounds. Is what we're showing in our uptake numbers. So about 120 to 140 total pounds of uptake of nitrogen at defoliation. And then substantial N can be supplied by the soil. So depending on organic matter, soil type, and the decomposition of soil organic matter, up to 80 pounds of nitrogen per acre can be released, even in our coastal plain soils, depending on cropping system, crop rotation. And the largest sink for N at harvest was cottonseed in our systems. Next is sulfur. Sulfur is a little bit different, trickier animal. We hadn't historically really were concerned much about sulfur fertility in Virginia. And that's because we used to get a large amount of sulfur deposition from coal-burning power plants. But as we introduced these calcium scrubbers on these plants, we cleaned up our air, so we see typically a greater sulfur response. But in our data, about 2.5 to 6 pounds of S to the acre between planting and first square of uptake. And we have seen sulfur uptake as high as 10 pounds to the acre of S, with a total about 15 pounds an acre, a total uptake at cutout. at normal S application rates. And I say normal S application rates because we go out there with something like gypsum or something like a polyhalite fertilizer, which is a potassium, magnesium, calcium sulfate, and we put out 180 pounds of sulfur on that plot, we can see as high as 25 to 30 pounds of uptake. So there is luxury consumption of sulfur, which can be detrimental on the back end of the growing season. And then normal 18 to 22 pounds of sulfur uptake, pounds of S per acre uptake at defoliation. However, majority of S uptake occurs between that first square and first bloom growth stage, and the major sink for sulfur is the leaves of cotton. So this is our current recommendations. We changed these when I first got to Virginia. Our current recommendations for nitrogen were 60 to 90 pounds of N to acre. And so now we've gone more to a yield goal. So we're 50 pounds of nitrogen per bale of expected yield. One caveat that I'd like to inform growers on is that residual soil residual nitrogen. They need to take into account what's in the soil, what will be mineralized by the soil. So for a two-bale crop, we typically 100 pounds of N to the acre, and that's what our growers shoot for. They shoot for about 1,000 pounds. Three bales, they're 150 pounds of N to the acre. And I know that's high, but if we take out that 30 to 50 pounds of soil, residual soil nitrogen, we're down at about that 120-pound rate on a good productive cotton soil. 20 to 30% of our nitrogen usually is applied at planting in a 2x2 band or in a broad pre-plant broadcast blend, and then 70, 80% of the rest of the nitrogen is applied in season in one or two applications. So we have some growers coming in at 5 to 6 leaves broadcasting an ammonium sulfate potassium blend, or we have some coming back at first square and putting out a single shot of 75 to 80 pounds of nitrogen. And then I also really recommend in-season monitoring with tissue testing. For sulfur, our current recommendations are 20 pounds of S to the acre. If you're following peanuts, you can cut that in half because of that sulfur credit from the land plaster. And the easy time to put this out is we recommend at side dress, but more and more I'm shifting to half at planting, half at side dress, because we see a greater sulfur response with S applied at planting. And then we want to use a sulfate source. If you're putting it out at side dress, you want to use a sulfate source. If you're putting it out at planting, you can use some elemental S if it's available. Elemental S has to break down and become plant available. And this just gives you a time during the growing season, when this nitrogen is being put out. And so I'm going to talk a little bit about some of the projects we've had dating back to 2013, where we've looked at different variety maturity groups or varieties, and then split applications versus single side dress applications of nitrogen in cotton. And then a second set of studies that we're looking at where we actually up the number of varieties. So we're looking at 5 common varieties and then 3 nitrogen application rates. And then we did a sulfur study over 3 years looking at 5 sulfur rates over 3 common cotton varieties and looking at the response to side dress sulfur. And that's kind of what I'm going to be talking about today. I try to, if it's a single fertility trial over years, I'll have the variety stated of that research on the chart, but hopefully it's not too confusing, as some of these trials could get pretty complex, as a lot of them have PGR components as well to look at the interaction between nitrogen management variety and then growth regulator management. So this is the first slide. This was 2013 data, and I wanted to put the yield per acre levels of this trial in this chart. So what we're looking at here is the plant architecture. So we went in and we plant mapped this cotton at cutout, and we had three variety maturity groups. And we used phytogen varieties in this study because when I started in 2012, phytogen cotton was 75% of Virginia acres. So we wanted to use varieties that Virginia growers were implementing. So we have phytogen 339, which is our early variety, phytogen 499, which is the mid, and then 575, which is a full season variety. And when we went in and mapped it, we also had two different nitrogen managements. 40 plus 40 is we put out 40 pounds of nitrogen at first square, and then 40 pounds of nitrogen at first flower. And then we came back, and then the second, the 80 pounds is 80 pounds of nitrogen, one shot at first square. And then plant growth regulator management, we had no PGR, LRM stands for low rate multiple applications, so 4 applications of 6 ounces of picks. Modified early bloom, or MEB, is we came in at first square, hit it with 6 ounces, and then we came back at first bloom, and based off our recommendations, we made the allotted PGR application, and we made a second one 10 to 14 days after that. Early bloom, it got 2 shots of heavy PGR application. I really want to look at this variety maturity and really focus on these first position, these far right columns here. When we look at first position fruit retention, so this is first position fruit, and we look at these retentions, we see that the lowest first position retention is that more indeterminate full season variety, and it's statistically different from 495. Second position, we get into second position fruit retention. What we see is that early season variety, 339, does not retain as much fruit as that 499, that mid-mature variety in this year of the study. And this is a common theme as we move forward in this study. If you see the first position and second position total number of bowls, you see 339, the early season variety, has the highest number of first position fruit, but the lowest number of second position fruit compared to the more indeterminate varieties. This is the same study that we conducted again in 2014. Again, a little bit higher yield levels. Yields were 1,500 to 1,800 pounds per acre in this study. And again, if we look at the first position fruit retention, we have 60% of the first position fruit being retained for the early season variety. Drops a little bit for the 495 or mid, and then drops significantly to 52%. But the second position fruit, again, is where the big the retention is the greatest, with only 30% of the fruit being retained at second position. We did not see any real retention differences in terms of nitrogen management across varieties. However, the total number of bowls, when we split that nitrogen in this year, the total number of bowls were significantly fewer per plant than the single application of nitrogen in 2014. 2015, same study. Again, we see the same trends year after year with these varieties in Virginia. The early season varieties have higher first position fruit retention. The late season varieties have lower percentage of first position fruit. And then the second position fruit retention varies depending on the environment of that year. And very few differences in terms of nitrogen management across the different varieties. So, and we did not see any interaction between variety and end management, which is something that's interesting to me, because that tells us we can manage timing of nitrogen fertilizer the same across these maturity groups. There's no interaction there, so we don't have to have special nitrogen recommendations for early season cotton or compared to late season or full season cotton. So getting into lint yield, this is 2013. This is looking at nitrogen rate by variety interaction. And what we did see is the full season variety in Virginia yielded significantly lower than the early and mids, which makes sense. We're farther north. These fuller season varieties don't have the time to mature the fruit in our environment. However, there's no differences in terms of the interaction between split nitrogen versus a single shot of side dress nitrogen. Again, 2014, same conclusion. The varieties differed. Actually, 339 dropped off a little bit. 499 was still, in that year, the mid-mature variety did the best. But when we look at nitrogen application timing across varieties, there's no difference, no interaction during 2014. Again, similar results in 2015. No interaction between cotton maturity group and nitrogen management during the 2015 study. So now shifting gears to a little bit more current study with a little bit more variety. So we're actually looking at 5 different varieties in this study and 3 different nitrogen rates. So we're just looking at variety, the genetics in that variety versus 3 different nitrogen rates, 80, 120, and 160. On average, as we increased above from 120 to 160, we decreased yields over that 80 pounds for all varieties. However, varieties did have an interaction where higher yielding varieties like phytogen 333 actually increased from 80 to 120, but then decreased beyond 120. Whereas if you looked at a variety like Stoneville 4946 or 499, those higher end rates steadily decreased in those varieties. One caveat to this study that I will point out, and we're going to talk about that a little bit in terms of just overall cotton production over time and over environments, is this was fluid nitrogen sources in this study. So this was, and we're going to get in a little bit more why that's important, but just remember this decrease up to 160 pounds is for fluid sources. So that's UAN ammonium sulfate blends or UAN ammonium thiosulfate blends. And there's a reason for that. And this is 2016. So this is phytogen 333, a high-yielding variety that was our standard in Virginia for about 3 years, 3 to 4 years. We're looking at nitrogen application systems across 5 nitrogen rates. And so we have a broadcast system, which is a urea ammonium sulfate blend at side dress, versus a dribbled system, which is a UAN ammonium thiosulfate mix, and an injected system with UAN ammonium thiosulfate. And what we see in this trial is the fluid sources of nitrogen in cotton have greater utilization in the linear portion of the response curves. And they also, the injected also continues to increase a little bit even at the higher nitrogen rates, whereas the dribble levels off and plateaus. The broadcast systems aren't as efficient as the fluid sources in our area, so they require more nitrogen to equal those yields. This is phytogen 333 in 2016. This is the same study, again, replicated in 2017. This study was done at 6 locations over 3 years, and this only one location was non-significant or non-responsive to nitrogen fertilization, and that was due to a hurricane decimating the location in 2016. But again, we see at those lower end rates, those fluid sources give us higher yields than the broadcast system, and the broadcast has a more linear response. So I have a master's student working on this. This is a combination of 5 sites. This is a quadratic plateau analysis that she ran for me across all sites, looking at relative yield versus optimum end rate. So if we looked at a dribble system for phytogen 333, what we see across all years on our coastal plain soils is that the optimal end rate is 105 pounds of N to the acre at a relative yield of about 82% of the maximum yield at that location. When we go to an injected system, the optimum end rate is about 110 pounds of nitrogen for a relative yield of 85%. So a little bit of bump up in yield, but we put a couple more pounds of nitrogen on. The drastic difference for cotton and for this germplasm for 333 is that when we use a broadcast system, a urea ammonium sulfate blend, the optimum end rate was 160 pounds of nitrogen to the acre at 84% relative yield, which means we had to increase nitrogen by 50 pounds or almost 50% in order to make up for the lack of efficiency in that source of nitrogen that we use. And I will caveat this. This was looking at reference materials, so this did not have any inhibitor on the urea to prevent or any stabilizer on this fertilizer to prevent losses to the environment. This is another trial that we had where we had 4 different nitrogen rates, but this is phytogen 450 in 2017. And again, the optimum end rate, these were fluid sources and broadcast sources combined. Our optimum end rate was around that 100 pounds of nitrogen to the acre. So again, even with different germplasm, different varieties, that optimum end rate for our upper southeast coastal plains falling right around that 100 to 120 pounds of nitrogen for fluid sources. So now we're going to change gears a little bit and get into management of sulfur for some contemporary cotton varieties. And the picture I have is a picture on my title slide. This is a picture. On the left is nitrogen-deficient cotton. So that's cotton that's had 0 pounds of nitrogen and 0 pounds of sulfur applied. On the right, that cotton has had 100 pounds of nitrogen and 0 pounds of sulfur applied, and this was injected UAN. And I've shown this picture in some different fertility talks, and maybe even here. When I got back from China, my technicians put this trial out. I got back from China in 2016, and my technician pulled me to the side after about 2 weeks and said, "We got a problem. I know we put fertilizer out on these plots, but they're extremely yellow." And so I went out and started rating the plots, and I started looking at plot maps after I got back and realized that when we injected UAN, we exacerbated sulfur deficiencies on our sandy soil, so we threw that nitrogen-sulfur ratio out of alignment. And so what had happened, that cotton had grown so fast that sulfur was now the most limited nutrient in this variety. This is phytogen 499. This is the first year of the study, of that study that we were doing, looking at different combinations of nitrogen-sulfur fertilizers. This is a different study. However, we looked at three common varieties from 2014, 15, and 16. And we looked at phytogen 333, phytogen 499, and Stoneville 4946 to see if there's any difference in sulfur utilization over five different sulfur application rates of side dress. We saw none. Everything, the sulfur content in the petioles, which at both locations at each of the years, this is just 2015, we saw that there was no differences among the varieties, which is a good sign. It means that varieties are responding similar to sulfur application. Then one other way we look at this is we start looking at petiole N or petiole nitrate N to sulfur ratios. As you see, at the no sulfur rates, that ratio is extremely high and then drops to about 5. On the location 2, where we had some residual sulfur, we still saw a drop, but not as dramatically as at the location 1 this year. However, we did see an interaction between variety and sulfur rate when we looked at this petiole nitrate to petiole sulfur ratios. And at the lower, the zero sulfur level, what we see is that phytogen 499 and Stoneville 4946 actually was a little bit more sulfur deficient, or that there's a little bit higher ratio than that phytogen 333. However, as you continued on through the rest, once we put 10 pounds of sulfur, there was no differences among the varieties at each of the other sulfur rates. However, yield we did not see any statistical differences among varieties or sulfur rates in any of the six site years of this location when we use a broadcast blend of ammonium sulfate and urea at side dress. And this is what got us thinking about, will this change if we change our timing and environments of sulfur? Because again, still not seeing any differences in sulfur application rates, which is a little worrisome because we know we're responsive to sulfur. So then we started looking at granular blends versus liquid formulations of sulfur. And we started seeing this. This was the first year in 2016. This was phytogen 499. And we see the liquid, we saw an increase in yield and then a turn down at the higher sulfur rates, whereas the urea AMS blends were relatively flat across the response curve in 2016 for phytogen 499. We changed varieties in 2017. We went with a phytogen 450. And this is what we saw. There was no differences really in materials at each of the sulfur rates, but we saw a gradual decline as we increased sulfur rate for both formulations with this variety. We decreased yields in Suffolk. And this is 2018. So because 450 was phased out, we had to switch to another mid-maturing variety. So we went to Delta Pine 1646. This is a high-yielding variety for us. And I haven't run stats on this, but it looks like each of the years, we saw an increase in yield with increasing sulfur rates at both locations up to about 20 pounds. There's no difference in the formulation of that sulfur, whether it was a fluid formulation or a granular formulation during this trial. So three different years, six or nine different environments, because these sites were replicated three times. The 499, 450, and 1646 responded differently to different sources of sulfur and nitrogen. So this is a little that's piquing our interest even more in terms of what do we do moving forward with sulfur fertility. And then this is the 499 looking at different nitrogen rates on the left-hand side of the chart versus the three locations. And we see as we increase at the higher yielding sites, higher nitrogen rates equaled higher yields at 60, 100, 140 pounds. If we had a low yield environment, putting on too much nitrogen actually decreased yields. When we looked at different fluid formulations, so 24003, 24006, and 24009 with 499, we saw an initial bump at each location, but as we increased sulfur, we started to decrease yields again. This is the 450 data from 2017. We see a more consistent increase because of the higher lint yields with increased nitrogen at those two sites is not significant. And again, as we increase the amount of sulfur we're putting out, it seems like this variety, we're decreasing lint yields. Though maybe not significant, there is a slight numerical decrease at each of our locations. 1646, this is the high yielding variety we consider. As we look at the different nitrogen rates and the formulations at both locations in 2018, we see some bumps. One thing that's interesting in 1646, as we increase N rate, go up that x-axis, it looks like we need more sulfur to continue increasing those lint yields in 2018, which is an interesting observation we had not seen with any of the other previous two varieties. So it actually looks like 1646, To put this into perspective, at 140 pounds, that 24009 is putting out 45 pounds of sulfur to the acre, which is over twice our recommended rate of sulfur. At the 100 pounds, it's 30 pounds of sulfur. And you see that's the highest lint yield at that second location in 2018. So what we think we know, and I put this because the varieties turn over so quickly, it seems like we have to keep up and keep doing these variety by fertility interaction trials to stay on top of our recommendations. Tyson mentioned in his talk that herbicide traits and some of these packages are driving variety selection. And I would concur with that. For farmers, they are. These trait packages are driving the varieties they're buying. However, I always caution them that yield potential is king and that I would rather them see growing the highest yield potential varieties and maybe looking at more conventional ways of managing weeds than the ease of use of these herbicide technologies. Because as we saw on that OVT chart, yield potential can be very large, even on some of these commercial varieties. So yield potential, I still tell growers, is the king when making a variety decision. Contemporary cotton varieties respond similar to NNS. However, when you have higher genetic potential and that environment come together and you have higher yield potentials, that's when we see we can really push some yields with different fertility levels, at least in Virginia. And it seems evident with phytogen 333 and 1646 that those two varieties are higher yielding varieties in our environment and typically are the ones that do better in with higher fertility levels also. However, it makes it hard because of the continuous turnover of cotton varieties on the market. I'm a plead with Dave that they leave 1646 on the market for at least another 5 years. I don't see that happening, but I'm a plead with him on that one. And then environmental conditions are the key to it all. Environment, I think, in terms of fertility management, plays a tremendous role in what responses you see across years. And then response to S is going to be closely related to that environment. If you're in a mid-south soil that has relatively more organic matter than what we have, you probably will not see the same sulfur response you're going to see in Virginia on a coarse, low CEC, low organic matter soil. So growers need to take that into consideration as well. And with that, I'll take any questions.
What is your organic matter in the field?
Most of our organic matter are probably around 1% or less on our coastal plain soils. Yeah.
Hunter, I know you said earlier that about 98% of your area is non-irrigated.
Yep.
On your trials, most of these, when you're comparing solid to liquids, are you putting them on the surface? Or are you trying to inject the liquids compared to
the... So most of the time we're dribbling. But in the trials where we're evaluating placement, we inject and dribble. But yeah, Virginia is 100% of our acres is either no-till or strip tillage, conservation tillage. Very little conventional tillage, actually, hopefully none in cotton. We do have some for some peanut acres, but so we're putting it on the soil surface. We're not disturbing the soil surface or trying to disturb it as minimally as possible.
Do you think that can affect your response to both N and S? Because you're relying on rainfall because you're not irrigated, so you're relying on rainfall to get that material to the root zone.
Yes, so it does, right? That's why the question is, does the source and our dry land growing system affect the efficiency of fertilizer? And it does. So that's why we see at those lower N rates in that linear response curve, these fluid sources typically will perform better and have higher yields. A caveat to that also is we're not, in these trials, we're not protecting with any inhibitors. So any ammonia volatilization controls. And we can lose up to 35 to 50% of our nitrogen from urea surface applied on our soils. So if our guys are in a urea ammonium sulfate system, I'm recommending that they're treating with a product that contains MBPT to prevent against ammonia volatilization, because that's another inefficiency of that system. But yeah, so placement is very critical in our systems.
Hunter, do you think that the N to S ratio is more impacted pure from a yield potential aspect, or might there be underlying metabolic pathway differences among varieties and not necessarily yield potential?
So I think it depends on the available sulfur, but N-S ratio I think can be impacted by variety, just in growth habit. If you have a more vegetative variety, maybe it can get out of whack a little bit more. But consistently, we're going to optimize yields, and we've looked at this, we need an N-S ratio in the leaf of about 8 to 1. So 8 parts nitrogen, 1 part sulfur. And we don't typically see that get out too far out of alignment unless we start, you know, injecting just straight UAN without having a sulfur component of that fertilizer formulation. But I think the variety does play a part in it. But going back to, like, what Tyson data was showing about the amount of variation in lint yield affected by genetics versus environment, I think the genetics are so close in these commercial varieties that we can pick out lint yield differences, but as far as like the nutrient uptake and the biomass produced, they're so close in terms of that amount that it'd be hard to pick up.
Any other questions for Dr. Frame? All right, let's give him a hand.